Desert Community, so we will call the Desert Community Energy Board meeting of June 29th, 2022 to order at 3:32 p.m. Clerk Nelson, nice to see you. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, good afternoon. City of Palm Springs?
Here.
And City of Palm Desert?
Present.
You have a quorum, Chair.
Thank you. Any staff or other modifications, changes to the agenda?
We don't have any changes, no.
Okay, so we'll move on to public comments on agenda item. This time is for members of the public to address the committee on agenda items. Agenda items are limited to 3 minutes. If you want to speak on an agenda item, but you'd rather wait till the agenda item, please let us know now and we will be happy to accommodate you as well. Do we have any public comments?
We did not receive any public comments and I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, if anyone is on the phone, hit *9 and or raise your hand. But seeing none, we'll close public comment. We'll now go to board and director and staff comments. Palm Desert, Councilmember Quintanilla, any comments you'd like to share?
Nothing specifically on my end that applies here. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you. And just briefly, I know our Planning Commission recently approved what I think will be the largest battery storage, from what I understand it, in the state. And I know as we're looking at, you know, battery storage and wanting to do more local, as we did with the 3 windmill farms, I just wanted to alert staff that did go through. And assuming no one has appealed or pulled it up to council, as far as I know, it may not get as much media as if it came to council. So it's final by the Planning Commission, unless it does. So I just want to alert you to that. And I will be sharing some information with staff, and I'll share it with Councilmember Quintanilla as well, from a conference I just got back from with some really innovative ideas as well. I'd love to hear the ones you were sharing before we started. Because as we move forward in this program, right, the more creative and different means we can to reduce our carbon footprint here and provide 100% carbon-free power as the most effective and lowest cost way possible is, of course, one of our key missions. So, and I look forward to talking to you more on that offline, council member. Ms. Barros, do you have anything?
Thank you, Chair Kors and Councilmember Quintanilla. I have just a couple updates. One of those is, as we're watching the state budget, one of the items that has been in the proposed budget is the California Arrearage Payment Program, the CAP 2.0. This is a program that we were able to participate in where funds are made available for customers who've had trouble paying their bills and are delinquent, and there's some funding that are helping those customers. And we also receive funds back for some of the delinquencies. So there is a second phase of that that's proposed in the state budget, which obviously is going to be approved here shortly. I haven't checked, it may be on the docket today, but we wanted you to be aware of that. Also, there are a lot of funding opportunities in the energy sector, and staff is going to be taking a look at those and providing an update for you at the July meeting.
Great.
One other item is just with respect to our procurement policy. This was something that Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan asked about last time. We are working on an updated procurement policy, and then we expect to have that on the agenda in July. And that's all I have.
Great, thank you. And I know as the infrastructure bill has a lot of, you know, focus on climate related to infrastructure. So I think that'll be helpful. And I think CVAG Energy Environment is probably looking at that. So that gets out to all cities as well as to DCE. So thank you for that. Next item is our consent calendar. We have 4 items on it. Anyone have anything they want to pull from consent?
I would like to pull the minutes, as I was not present for the last meeting, nor have I had much of a chance to look at them. In all honesty, I'm thinking I may just abstain from all of that, as it was a very large packet and I had an hour notice before the meeting.
Of course. Yeah, so I would suggest that we, without objection, continue the minutes to the next meeting. Does that make sense, Clerk? Okay. So we'll continue item 6A to the next meeting, and we'll take up the consent calendar for 6B, C, and D. If you feel prepared to vote on those items, then we'll take a motion if you'd like to make one. Item five, I mean, I can make the motion to move items six, B, C, and D on the consent calendar.
I was just trying to quickly peruse.
Okay, take your time.
This all seems like a very reasonable, adequate movement of the things that are going forward in the direction of the spirit of things. So I would, I second that.
Okay, so all in favor? Yes.
Aye.
Okay, so that carries, and thank you. We'll next go to item seven, which and 7A, which is our fiscal budget for 2022-23. So I think we have, they're both on. Yeah, it's Claude, and I think Donna's on as well. Welcome everyone for joining, and it'd be great if you could go through the presentation and, you know, anything that are especially given we have a first time from Councilmember Quintanilla for Palm Desert, you know, please feel free to jump in with any questions during the presentation. We're pretty informal, and given you joined us on short notice, we really appreciate that. Please don't hesitate, you know, to ask questions or ask us to slow anything down or anything along those lines. So please go ahead with the presentation.
All right, thank you, Chair Kors. And I do have to say, I really like your shirt there. I don't, you know, how we match today, but that's nice. Thank you,
Councilman.
Well, you know, I guess we might have subconsciously.
There you go, thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Quintanilla, for joining us today. Yeah, and as the chair said, we're happy to answer any questions along the way. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot to take in. I'm relatively new to the, you know, agency over the last year and a half or so. So, you know, it's a pretty steep learning curve, and we're happy to, you know, walk you through anything if it comes up, okay? So, yeah, let's just jump in. Well, first I should introduce Janice. I don't think I've introduced her to the board yet, but she actually replaced Valdemir as the accounting manager, and has really been, you know, a big driver in all of the changes we've been doing to our financial statements upon the board's request, and really, you know, buttoning some of those, you know, budget to actuals up, and getting some comparative statements there. So welcome, Janice. And then, of course, Don Dame, we couldn't do the any of this budget stuff without his, you know, subject matter expertise, as it were. So just want to thank everyone for that. And with that, I can jump into, you know, a little overview of some of the budget assumptions that are playing into the budget. And of course, the first one, our wonderful city of Palm Springs here in the Valley, probably the biggest supporter of DC, and it's actually the only active CCA. So that's one of our assumptions, is that hopefully Palm Desert will be joining soon, but for this next fiscal year, you know, that's not what we're assuming to be the case, as that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So that's one of our budget assumptions. Of course, the other budget assumption really comes from the Energy Authority, TEA. They're a huge team of experts, subject matter experts. And, you know, we have taken their June 1st financial model, and that's really going to overview all the wholesale cost, procurement, settlement, and delivery pieces of the budget, which is probably, you know, I forget, Janice will tell us later, but one of the largest percentages of the cost is obviously the revenue and load and all that. So those figures come from the June 1st FIMO. Of course, you know, that's updated daily, more or less. So there might be some slight variations from newer financial models, but, you know, that's what we base it on, as we have in prior years. Another assumption we had to make for the budget was the up-down annual average. And we were really conservative, I feel, based on looking at actuals and working with TEA. And that's going to be the 12% for those individuals. Councilmember Quintanilla, we only have two kind of levels at the CCA. There's the carbon free, and then there's the desert saver. So if people want to opt down, they're going to opt down from the carbon free to the desert saver. So we're estimating that about 12% will do that opt down. And just to remind everyone, we did not, one of the assumptions is obviously we don't have a middle tier there. So it's just the two programs. And then we are going to look at the opt out percentage, and that, you know, we again, we're conservative here and estimated a little higher than actuals, that 10% opt-out average. So that'd be customers that are leaving the CCA platform and getting bundled back with SCE. And then one of the biggest assumptions we have is to keep the rates in line with current policies. And we know that the Desert Savers at a small discount to SEC rates, and then the carbon freeze at the premium there. So, you know, all those assumptions are in line with the board policies that we currently have. And we can talk about rates so a little bit more.
If you can go back just to a quick slide as I'm trying to take it in. So you're saying that in Palm Springs, that there's a projection of a 12% decrease in the opt down. So with TEA, the 10% opt out, is that an increase or a decrease? So right. I just see that they have 10%, in which direction is it going?
Right. So TEA, and it might be confusing with the column there because we're just moving along. So they basically do all of our financial modeling, right? They're the experts, and not only do they do the financial modeling, they're actually giving us credits, DCE credit support to go out and procure energy, settle it, negotiate those kind of deals. So they're helping us with all these assumptions, more or less. So the 10% opt-out rate would be going to Southern California Edison, actually. So if people want to get out of the DCE program, then they will go over and out and get bundled with regular SEC. I have a terrible time with that, SCE customers.
So one question which might be helpful in response is, as you're looking at the 12% opt-down and the 10% opt-out, that's total of the 100% customers. It's not an additional 12% more or opting down than have been in the past.
Yes.
Which I think was part of the question. Gotcha. So this is just sort of where, which is pretty close to where we are, but we always assume some more might. And so it's sort of to conservatively budget based on that.
That's right.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. So if we want to hop over to the next slide, we'll see that, you know, rates, obviously, we're budgeting rates and the assumption that we're going to recover all costs and expenses. Of course, we know we're looking to build cash reserves. And also, you know, important with the rate setting is that we have to meet our loan terms, conditions, and financial covenants. Because Council Member Quintanilla, I'll just throw out there has been cash flow issues, and we've recently entered into some credit agreements with a bank that does a lot of work with CCAs. So, you know, it's important that we meet those covenants when they're due. And of course, a big part of the budget assumptions is maintaining compliance. There's, of course, all kinds of compliance, like regulatory compliance, legislative compliance, and of course, operating compliance, which I believe, you know, following board direction and all those type of things. And, you know, another assumption that we built in the budget is working really closely with CalCCA again. They've been, and that's kind of like the CBAG for the cities here. They're like the regional CCA aggregator, and they do a lot of legislative work for DCE. And, you know, they've been a real great help with this recent FSR issue. So they're really on top of the regulatory side of things, and we budgeted to work with them again. And I mentioned TA earlier, or T, maybe that's easier to say, T. And, you know, they're budgeted to continue their credit support function, which we'll get to in a little bit and talk about a plan, you know, that we've already started discussions and looking at how DCE can do that on its own and when it'll be ready, based on some of these projections that we're going to look at here in a minute. So, you know, a few other assumptions that I want to touch on, of course, is CVAG has been performing staffing since the inception of DCE, and we anticipate to keep doing that. And as well, you know, we really are going to keep exploring local renewables and energy programs. Like we see that there's those windmills in the city of Palm Springs proper that are, you know, actually generating energy for our customers. And of course, we're going to be following all board directives throughout the year. So that's a little bit about our budget assumptions. And for kind of a big picture, look at some of the facts and figures. You know, I think Don Dane would be a great person to lead us through that. Don, if you want to take us away on the next slide. And
I'm back with you now. Thank you, Claude, and good afternoon, Chair Kors, and thank you for attending, Councilperson Quintanilla. This is a snapshot of our budget for the current year from last year, our projected end game for the end of this budget year coming up tomorrow, and our forecast budget for next year starting on July 1 going through June 30th of next year. This is very high level. There's a couple of things that I just want to stand out. We're not going to go through the whole chart, but if you look at revenues, line 4 in this chart, you'll see that at the beginning of the budget year we are still in, we were projecting about $46.3 million. Our actual revenues, where we think, are going to come in closer to $48.9 million. That largely reflects a higher rates associated with continually increasing power costs that we've seen over the last 2 to 2.5 years. But not too far out of line with budget. If we look at next year, we see those that revenue projection goes up to about $65 million. That reflects the maintenance of our 14% margin for our 100% carbon-free product. It represents the maintenance of our small discount on our Desert Saver product for those not enrolled in the 100% carbon-free product. And the primary reflection of that increase for 22-23 versus where we think we're going to end the current year is building financial reserves. We expect this next budget year to get us well on the track of the financial reserve targets that we want to attain. And there'll be more on that later in this budget. Total operating costs, if you look at line 18, are about $2.8 million. We thought we were going to have this year. They're coming in at about $2.7 million. Next year, we think they're going to be about $3 million. These operating costs are non-power supply costs. They do reflect the services of the Energy Authority, Calpine, and the billing activities of Southern California Edison, as well as all the support we get from the CVAG folks. The total wholesale power costs are the lion's share of our budget. If you look at line 7, about $41 million for this year, both forecast and actual, and going up to about $45 million in the upcoming budget year. I want to stress, Claude mentioned it, we're using TEA's June 1 financial model. On a day-to-day basis, these numbers do move a little bit as power markets move a little bit, either up or down. Generally, the movements are not very large, but they do indeed change on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis, increase or decrease as power markets move. If you go to the little square on the left, one of the second bullet is probably really the most important bullet on this slide. It shows that our power supply costs are fully 94% of our budget costs. Yeah, DCE makes a commitment to serve its customers. It serves those customers regardless of what power supply costs are. It makes that commitment in advance. And most of those costs, although we spend a great deal of time and effort on hedging and risk management activities, the bulk of our costs are not discretionary, not directly under DCE's control. They really reflect the happenings of the power market. I also want to do a side bullet while I'm on this chart. DCE consists of two members, the cities of Palm Springs and Palm Desert. Palm Springs is the only active CCA. So for this year, for all the budget numbers, both revenues and costs that you see in front of you, as further explained in the staff report, are fully assigned to the only active CCA, the city of Palm Springs. We do have a mechanism to the extent Palm Desert becomes involved in one of more of our programs or one of more of our customer outreach activities, we do have several methods of allocating between DCE and Palm Springs and Palm Desert. But again, I want to stress that for the current budget purpose, 100% of revenues, 100% of costs, all allocated to the city of Palm Springs. If and when there is a program or item in which Palm Desert becomes involved, or it opts at some point to initiate and start its program, we will reestablish a formal allocation to Palm Desert at that time.
So just a question on that, because I know we talked about it last year, and we did have some costs, right? Obviously, there are CVAC costs, preparing the meetings, some of the PR costs, right? We create documents that both cities share, I believe, at council meetings, and social media stuff. So I don't, they're not large costs, but there are definitely costs that are shared, right? So those have always been sort of put in the joint bucket of, you know, the entity versus just allocated to Palm Springs. That's still going on?
No, that is not going on in this budget, Chair Kors.
Okay, I had a head nod from Janice, so the other way. And I didn't notice it, and normally I have, so it'd be great to understand that, because we've always done that.
Yeah, unless there's an allocation here I'm unaware of, you can see the customer programs numbers are really, they're actually going to increase next year, but there's no direct involvement in customer retail energy programs by Palm Desert. These costs are relatively small, and it can be argued, and we can certainly bring this back to the board, but if there were allocation of certain costs to Palm Desert, we would probably need to allocate some portion, however small, of the revenues to Palm Desert as well, unless it's strictly an offtake program. Another thing we may be able to do is if and when Palm Desert does step up to initiate its program, at that point in time, we may feel it's more appropriate to recapture some of those relatively small costs, like CalCCA participation and the like, that may have benefited the Palm Desert folks over time up to the point when they step into the CCA world.
Is that a change from last? That seems like a change from our past practices. So that's where I guess I'm confused, because we had talked to, there was sort of an in-depth talk about this a year ago on how, what the allocation was in a couple of areas where we, you know, went back and forth, and there weren't huge amounts of money by any means, given there's no power purchase. So Janice, you were nodding that it was included. So can you, maybe you could weigh in.
Chair Kors, yes, I'd like to do that. The overhead or operating costs are the ones that do get divided, but they're divided between Palm Springs and DCE, the administrative organization. As an example, legal fees. Legal fees, there are some things that we incur that are about the entire DCE organization and how we run it, not specific to Palm Springs. Audit fees is another example. There might be a 75-25 split. Because a lot of it, yes, is about Palm Springs and the energy and revenue, but there are certainly things that happen that are more administrative that help DC as an organization run. So in our actual overhead, not in the energy procurement nor in the revenue, but in the overhead costs, we do allocate them. And you see that on the financial statements that you get each a month.
Yeah, okay. And even our advocacy, right, where we jointly vote on what we want to advocate and things along those lines. So that was my understanding, and I was given Councilmember Quintanilla is new. So when you said that, I was a little surprised on. So that, yeah, it doesn't get charged to Palm Desert, it gets charged to the entity. And right, just like any reserves that come from the power go to Palm Springs, and any losses would go to Palm Springs, right, on the accounting sheets. Mm-hmm. But that's different than the overhead and some of those other costs, right, that impact the entity as a whole.
Now, are those fees or shared costs anywhere projected to increase? how is the projection of the growth of the Inland Empire factored into the supply and use projections? Since I know we are one of the fastest growing regions in the country. So what is the projection for increased residential use? And so you answered my question about Palm Desert in terms of who receives the fees and where the offset goes, but what's the projection for population growth?
I think if you it's summarized briefly on this slide with regard to the Palm Springs folks, you'll see load is expected to increase. If that's your question, load is projected to increase 3% from what we think it's going to be at the close of this year to next year. That's likely a combination of two things: typical load growth, population increase, also as the climate gets warmer, consumption levels increase. So load reflects both number of customers and usage per customer.
Thank you.
Are we ready to move on to the next slide, Claude?
Yep.
If the chair and the council member are.
Yep, two nods.
And I would just like to focus on the fact of the total revenue that we are projecting to generate this year. About 69% of that revenue will go to the energy itself. So procurement of the power that's being used will cover 69%. Less than 5% of the revenue that we generate will be used to pay overhead costs, the operating fees, as Dawn has referenced, to T, to Calpine, and to CVAG for the personnel and overhead costs that we contribute. That should leave us approximately $17 million that would go into our reserves. And those reserves that we're building will help us manage some of the future activity in procurement. And then Claude wants to give you some more information regarding our future reserve projections.
And I would just, which I think Councilmember Quintanilla probably knows, but for anyone in the public, what you don't see here versus if you're looking at Southern California Edison is a corporate profit margin. Everything that is generated goes right back to building reserves to do programs and projects for our residents and businesses who are our customers. Thank you.
All right, I think this is everyone's favorite slide. It's very exciting, and we like to call it the Big Green Mountain of Eventuality. And really what we're looking at is our reserves projection, right? And if you look where we're at right now, down at the bottom of the screen, you can see we've had a tough time this past year until March when we were able to really get that revolving line of credit in place. And, again, I really want to thank the city of Palm Springs for their support. It would not have happened. That line of credit probably wouldn't have happened, or it would have been a lot more expensive. It would have been a lot more expensive had we not had that guarantee. So just want to really give shout out to the city there and for their support. And I'll mention real quick that, again, this is a crude margin. And, in the energy business, I'm learning that a crude versus cash basis makes a big difference from month to month, even day to day. So remember, this is a crude basis. So the actual cash, number is going to sometimes be significantly lower depending on some of the assumptions. And typically there's maybe a 2 to 3 month lag on the revenues, which could, affect the margin on a cash basis anywhere from $8 to $12 million less than the accrued margin. So just kind of keep that in mind that, it's going to be kind of shifted down a little bit for cash basis. But what's really great about this is you can start seeing towards the end of 24 into 25, we're going to start hitting that mark that's been set by the board very wisely for the 4 to 6 month reserve revenue and reserves requirement. And, you know, I think the big key thing about that is once we're getting to that point, DCE really, then DCE is going to have much better leverage to go out and negotiate its own energy procurement. And then slowly, you know, in those years, start looking to move away from the total credit support that we graciously have been, you know, having TEA handle for us, and start doing that on its own, like several CCAs have already started doing in California with their commercial grade credit ratings. So I think that's the important thing on this slide. It's exciting and we're moving there. And, you know, just kind of talking about some ongoing activities that we, you know, are all aware of, or if we're not, you know, they're pretty important things. Obviously, SEC rate actions, we're pegged to them in some way. And, you know, their rates are rather high right now. And, you know, they're likely to be going down over the next, you know, year and a half or so and beyond. So we're going to keep monitoring that. And the model is going to keep getting updated to incorporate those actions, and our responses to them will be, you know, taken from board action and presented. So that's an important ongoing activity. Another one is the PCIA, and that's a confusing topic, but it also plays into the FIMO. And, you know, it's a really historically low right now, and we are anticipating that to be moving up at the, you know, kind of inverse of SEC rates, obviously. So that's something we're going to keep monitoring on into 24 and keeping you all abreast of that information. And of course,
can I interject and ask what PCIA is?
Yes.
I don't have all the alphabet soup down.
And I forgot to type that out. And it's called the Power Charge and Difference Adjustment. And apologies for having the acronym again. And basically, what I understand it is that imagine Southern California Edison. They procured, because they've had reserves for however many hundred years, they've procured energy back in, you know, the 80s, some power plants they developed then. Well, they, you know, now that those costs, it really has to do with the cost. So now that energy costs are so high, they're actually making like a profit on that. So it positively impacts DCE's customers.
Yeah, and this might be helpful. And thank you for asking that, because it's important for the public who won't know the acronyms, but it's sort of almost like an exit fee that any of these projects similar to DCE and DCE pay Southern California Edison for some accumulated power they bought, you know, in the past that was at higher rates. So now that they're selling it where they're not losing money, it lowers our, what that fee is, which lets us pass that on to customers. Is that provide enough information? Okay, great, thank you. And thank you, Claude, for that.
Oh, thank you, Chair, of course. I always think of those atomic power plants on the 5 over there on the way to San Diego when I think of that. And then of course, another thing is the global energy market turned oil. You know, we see what the effects of that are going on with the Russian war in Ukraine and all those things. So those are activities we're always having to monitor through the fiscal year. And then, you know, another thing, we're coming out of COVID. Well, I think I skipped over the COVID, but I think Katie touched on it at the beginning, is that there's another round of funding coming through the state's budget that would help offset some of the delinquent accounts receivable we have through the California Asset Protection Plan program. So those are things for monitoring. And then, of course, you know, now that we're coming out of the COVID, SEE has started to go back to their collection efforts and managing those accounts receivable, and the impact with the CAP, the California Asset Protection Program, and the accounts receivable collection is going to be an ongoing effort throughout the next fiscal year. And, you know, I've got to commend Janice and, you know, the our executive director at CBEC for Tom. They're really on top of these collection efforts. And of course, they're important to DC's customers. And we're talking daily with SCE. And, you know, we've seen some positive inflow recently related to that. And then to kind of finalize on these ongoing activities. Of course, these power purchase agreements, that's what PPA stands for, and their contract performance, you know, we're going to be monitoring those. We have a couple power purchase agreements in the works already. Councilmember Quintanilla, if you can recall the picture earlier on where you saw a Chair Kors and your colleague, Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan, under the windmill signing the contract, that's essentially a power purchase agreement where you're hedging, you know, for a long-term procurement. So there are counterparties that we have to deal with there. And of course, anytime you have a counterparty, you have counterparty risk. So, you know, we're constantly monitoring those activities and that contract performance. And of course, the next two bullets, load forecast versus actual load and rates and revenues. You know, the key thing here is that we have to keep revenues in line with costs. So, you know, that's what we're ongoing. And of course, we're meeting weekly with the Energy Authority, to evaluate those. And anytime, as a Chair Kors knows, there conversations need to be had, they'll be brought to the board for your consideration for the right decision. And of course, the energy market and wholesale supply costs have huge implications on everything DCE does. And the only thing I would say about this is it's as real as when you go fill up your gas in your car. Like that's, you know, how volatile things can be in this market and why it's so important and so exciting that, you know, we're climbing that green mountain of reserves, okay? And then, of course, we're going to evaluate alternative credit support mechanisms. We've been discussing that with moving into reserve growth and moving into our own credit worthiness. And I mentioned that the good news is there's lots of CCAs out there that, you know, they have quality commercial credit grades. And we're excited to see DCE stepping into that realm. And then, of course, David Friedman, CVAG staff here, is going to be talking about the California Public Utilities Commission and their financial, requirement. I can't remember what BESF stands for, but more or less, Don, Janice, do you remember what the S stands for? So I can tell Councilmember Quintanilla.
Security.
It's the financial security requirement.
Thank you, Katie. See, there's too many acronyms for me, I'm telling you. So, you know, that's a big activity. There's a lot of movement that David's going to talk about in a minute, but it does have effect on our activities. And then, of course, we've been talking throughout the year as DCE is growing operations, we can support more and more on the back end. You know, we're going to keep giving the board better information, you know, for their decision making with things like budget to actual comparisons. So that was really a high level overview of the budget. I know the staff report goes into huge amount of detail and we've answered quite a few questions and, you know, we'd be happy to take any more at this time, before we move to adopt the budget.
Any questions? That was extremely informative. I don't have any questions. You answered those along the way for me. And at least I did know the California Public Utilities Commission acronym.
That's about the only one I knew. That's why I said it right away.
Okay. Katie or staff, anything else you want to add or any questions?
Not unless there are other questions. I did want to just note, I think Councilmember Quintanilla, thank you for your listening to the presentation. There are a lot of acronyms and it is kind of a complicated business, but I did want to just note to your question earlier, comment about the load. The Energy Authority, which is a consultant that DCE works very closely with monitors the load on essentially a daily basis and has some models that are used to take a look at population growth and the changes in customers using electricity. So that is something that we track very closely in partnership with our team. Thank you.
And of course, we're always hopeful and do things so more people can get rooftop solar. And, you know, our incentive, given it's to provide, you know, low cost and green energy, is to get more people to do rooftop solar if we can do it in a way that's cost effective for them. So
makes sense. One of the things that I was on the, I believe it was the Equity Commissioner for the Public Utilities Commission, and they were talking about not just accessibility, but equity and affordability. So I appreciate that there is the constant observation on where these changes are going and the projections. So I greatly appreciate that all of these conversations are going on at the same time, because solar may not be feasible for everybody based on their home type, the age of their home. And so I'm hoping that down the line, there will be some discussions on retrofitting, for example, some of the older mobile homes that are in the area, and converting their wiring system and electrical conduits to what is required. But yeah, I love everything I'm hearing.
So would you like a motion? Is that next, or do we need?
That is a motion.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the budget. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, and the motion carries. So thank you all so much. Really appreciate all of you weighing in the presentation and the great work staff and our consultants do on all of this. We now have Mr. David Friedman. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Chair Coors, and thank you, Claude, for the introduction about the financial security requirement. So this matter is related to a possible substantial increase in the financial security requirement that DCE posts with Southern California Edison, and the need to amend the credit agreement with River City Bank that the board approved at the January meeting to cover that possible increase. Now, the financial security requirement is based on state law and California Public Utilities Commission rules, and is intended to protect the three investor-owned utilities from extra administrative costs and procurement costs resulting from a mass involuntary return of CCA customers to IOU service, because the CCA is no longer able to serve those customers. The financial security requirement is calculated using a very complex formula that's set out in the tariffs of each IOU and is reset each May 10 and November 10, affecting the following July 1 and January 1. Now, DC has always posted the minimum financial security requirement, which is $147,000. However, this past May 10th, SCE filed with the CPUC an advice letter requesting an increase in DC's financial security requirement to $5.2 million based on SE's use of April forward energy prices that have spiked substantially because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the resulting disruptions in the energy markets. Now, had SE calculated the financial security requirement using the March forward prices, as did Pacific Gas and Electric and San Diego Gas and Electric, the other two IOUs, DCE's financial security requirement would have stayed at $147,000. Now, faced with this very, very substantial increase from $147,000 to $5.2 million, staff worked with our legal counsel to file a protest with the CPUC, which had two main arguments. First, we argued this SCE misapplied its own tariff, and the financial security requirement should be about $4.5 million using the April forward prices. Second, we argued that the sudden spike in the financial security requirement amount violated state law and the CPUC rules. And we asked the CPUC to suspend, or better, reject SCE's advice letter to resolve these issues. On June 7th, SE responded to our protest. They did agree that they misapplied their tariff, and they recalculated our financial security requirement down to $4.5 million. Now, as expected, SE disagreed. They violated state law and the CPUC rules. Next slide, please. On June 9th, the CPUC granted our request to suspend the SE's advice letter for up to 120 days or until October 6th. Now, late this morning, we received the CPUC's formal notification that it has rejected SE's advice letter. The financial security requirement will stay at $147,000 at least until the next expiration date of December 31. We asked River City Bank to amend the credit agreement just in case our protest letter was unsuccessful and as may be needed for future financial security requirement postings, and the bank has agreed to do so. Next slide, please. the amended line of credit terms are essentially the same as the agreement that you approved this past January. It's a commercial revolving line of credit with the maximum commitment increased to $13 million. Up to $8 million is available for cash advances, as is currently the case. Drawings bear interest at the three-month Treasury bill yield, which was 1.12% as of June 1, with interest rates increasing, it's 1.75% as of Monday's close, plus a margin of 1.75%. The City of Palm Springs remains the guarantor, and the City Council, thank you, Chair Kors, reaffirmed the guarantee at its meeting on June 16th. The term is up to 3 years, again unchanged until February 2025. And then at the end of the 3 years, DCE would have the option to convert any remaining principal to a term loan. Next slide, please. So staff is working on the next steps. RCB's loan committee has approved the credit agreement, and we received the final loan documents. Assuming board approval, these loan documents can be executed in the first part of next month, and staff will continue to monitor the CPUC's financial security requirement proceeding where FSR issues will be decided. The existing financial security requirement letter of credit would be amended if ultimately mandated by the CPUC, but for the moment, we're good at $147,000. Next slide, please. Staff's recommendation is to adopt resolution 2022-05, approving the First Amendment to the credit agreement with River City Bank for an increased total not to exceed $13 million and authorize the executive director in consultation with legal counsel to take the necessary steps to finalize and execute the credit agreement amendment and the related documents. And that concludes my staff report, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Councilmember Quintanilla. Any questions?
Referring back to my copious notes here, I figure as I'm learning, it would be great to take things back to Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan and say, here's the bulk of it. But no, you've done a spectacular job of helping me understand what the financial changes are, what the contributions and the way everything's floating. And very, very many kudos to whoever decided to stand up to SCE and say, no, we're not doing that. So thank you for pressing that effort. We know that they're a giant who does not move. And I'm grateful that you at least got them to bring it a little bit lower, which is, I think, something that they don't do frequently. So with that, I celebrate your efforts. And if there's no other questions, I'd like to move.
Great. I will second and just thank you to Mr. Friedman and staff for really the great work, both on getting that lower and then at least having this suspended through the end of the year. That takes a lot of effort and really appreciate just the constant great work we see. So with that, I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. Are you staying, David?
Yes, I am.
If I remember. Okay, so next we'll go to item 7C, which is DC Renewable Energy Procurement and SCE's PCIA Voluntary Allocation.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you again, Chair Kors. This matter is related to the voluntary allocation and market offer process ordered by the CPUC. In this process, DC has an opportunity to secure renewable resources from SCE. Now, SCE is offering short and long-term allocations of its renewable energy portfolio, which DCE can elect to purchase in 10% increments. The purchases would be made at the market price benchmark using a formula set by the CPUC, and DCE can resell any of the energy that it purchases from SCE. Next slide, please. Here you can see the renewable resources that DC can purchase from SCE, largely wind and solar matching our current portfolio. Next slide, please. Now, following a discussion with the Energy Authority, staff recommends that DC take a 100% allocation of the long-term renewable energy offered by SCE, which would be available to DCE for at least 10 years. The purchase helps DC meet its long-term contracting requirements under the CPUC rules. It minimizes the volume of renewable resources at risk at being stranded at SCE. It allows for future procurement of new resources, and unbundled renewable energy certificates not linked to a specific project make up a very small portion of the portfolio, and additional long-term contracts may be secured in 2024 when the voluntary allocation market offer process will repeat. Next slide, please. Well, the voluntary allocation market offer process has several parts. First, if the board approves staff's recommendation, staff will finalize enrollment by July 1 by executing the election form included in your agenda package. Staff will then come back to the board at the July 18 meeting for approval of SCE's voluntary allocation agreement based on a template that the CPUC approved at its voting meeting last Thursday. And assuming board approval at the July 18 meeting, staff will execute the voluntary allocation agreement and SCE will complete voluntary allocation contracting by July 29. And then later this year, staff will review with T opportunities to purchase additional renewable energy in SCE's market offer of resources that are unsold in the voluntary allocation. And we will come back to the board for approval of any future purchases. In the meantime, staff will continue to monitor the CPUC regulatory oversight of the voluntary allocation and market offer process, including possible changes in the market price benchmark formula that were discussed at a CPUC workshop that just concluded this a few hours ago this afternoon. Next slide, please. Staff's recommendation is to approve a voluntary allocation of Southern California Edison's power charge and difference adjustment long-term renewable energy portfolio and authorize the executive director to execute the voluntary allocation election form. That concludes once again my staff report, and I am available for any questions you may have. And T is also available if you have any specific questions on the allocated portfolio.
Okay, now I'll unmute. Councilmember Quintanilla, do you have any questions on this?
No, I don't. I'm just looking over my notes. I don't have any question marks or stars to follow up on. So I defer.
I have one brief one. That July, I think you had 29th date, I think was to submit. Is that like the final date to do it, or the date we're planning to do it, or?
The SE just this morning confirmed the calendar. So we'll need to really, as soon as the board meeting is over on July 18th, sign the voluntary allocation agreement. The CPUC approved the template. So there's relatively little margin for maneuvering. They'll be completing it. We'll have the draft July 8th probably, and we'll include that in the board package for the July 18th meeting. And then SE needs to complete the process by July 29th.
Okay, and just so I know, and I was going to raise it when we talk about our next meeting date, but since if we moved our meeting back to, let's just say July 25th, a week later, would that work? Like how much room do we have? Because we now have a council, I may need to have some adjustment in the meeting time due to a special council meeting study session that got scheduled.
I also want to know the answer to that question. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, please. Go ahead.
No, I think that those are clear questions. I would not like to leave Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan, who's been very passionate about this, to not also have the opportunity. And it should be his baby from how long he's been working on it. Yeah. So I would love to know the answer to that timeline in order to provide it to him as well.
Look, based on what I heard this morning from Edison, that July 18th is their deadline. I'm not sure how flexible they are on that, because they are under the CPUC order. So the schedule, the final date of July 29th is set by the CPUC. So that deadline is inflexible. Whether Edison would accommodate us if we submitted the agreement, which is a form agreement, I would have to go back to Edison and find that out.
Okay. I should know more on my calendar tomorrow night, and can share it with Katie, who can then check in with Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan. It could also be earlier.
Yes.
Right. It's just sometimes we end up having closed sessions on those days, and that would interfere at least with the current time of our meeting.
Yes.
I was going to say we can check, as David indicated, on whether there might be some flexibility on Edison's part. And then certainly confer with you and the possibility of having the meeting a little bit earlier. If in fact that delay date of July 18th is firm and we don't have that flexibility.
Great, okay.
So at this time, do we table the motion pending the updated meeting time, or do we conclude, or do we pass the motion and then come back and edit the dates later?
Yeah, well, it's a two-part process. So today is to approve the allocation, the 100%, and the deadline for today is July 1. And then, so that's just a form that Tom Kirk would fill out, and I've already prepared that for him. And it really just says category B, 100%. It's fairly simple. And then we come back with the actual agreement, and that would be on the calendar for the July board meeting, whenever that date is set. And the
Perfect.
Form,
thank you.
Yeah, is part of the agenda package, and literally it's putting 100 next to B and zeros next to A and C.
The most simple thing we've discussed today on that part, at least with numbers. Okay, so was that a motion to move that the part that's up for today, Councilmember?
Yes, I motion to approve.
Okay, I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you again, Mr. Friedman.
Thank you.
So now we're on our information items. Just looking if there's anything that, it's attendance, it's our meeting calendar. Oh, go ahead, Ms. Farris.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if there aren't any questions on the information items, I did want to just note we are continuing to outreach to customers on summer readiness and reminding folks about using less electricity, especially during the peak hours, 4 to 9 p.m. We do have some social media and a nice handout that's been updated. And we'll send that around to you. So if you want to circulate it as well, that's an important message during the summer months. It is one way that folks can try to cut their bills a little bit. Obviously, it's a challenging time, but the more we avoid those peak hours, which is when energy is the most expensive, we really want to continue to get that word out. So I want to note that. And also, we did want to check in with you with regard to the August meeting. I'm going to jump ahead of number 9, and just before we go forward, we may have some additional agreements similar to the Ohm Connect agreement for what's called our midterm reliability requirements that may be ready in August. And we just want to get a look ahead as to whether that August meeting date is one that there might be any potential conflicts with, or we can maybe follow up and check on that at a later time.
You know, all the Mondays in August look good, so I have a lot of flexibility. Because council is, in theory, dark in August, although we haven't been that successful on that. But Mondays are unusual. It's just this one Monday that may be an issue. So.
Okay. Right now, our meeting is scheduled. A regular meeting date would be the 15th.
Right.
So we'll follow up to make sure, but I just wanted to kind of get a look ahead if that looked like that might be a problem. Thank you. Right.
Okay, so our next item is public comment on non-agenda items, but items that are within the purview of the committee, but were not on the agenda. Clerk Nelson, do we have any?
We did not receive any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised this time.
Okay, thank you very much. So our next DC meeting will tentatively be held at July 18th, 2022 at 3 p.m. via Zoom. And if there is a date change, we will try and get it out as soon as possible. And a reminder that CVAG's General Assembly was held, right? Wasn't that 2 days ago? I'm looking at that.
That actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. The General Assembly went very well. It was on Monday.
Just remember.
I guess we got left on the agenda.
Yes. I'm reading it. I'm like, wait, that just happened. Again.
But I did want to just thank you both for being available. This was kind of a quick turnaround in terms of our regular schedule. Councilmember Kintani, I also wanted to note that we have a really great team, and we'd be happy to provide a time if you'd like to sit down and go over some of this. It's a very important but complicated business, and obviously we're anxious to work with the City of Palm Desert to answer any questions you might have. So
absolutely. I will definitely take you up on that. The decisions that we make are not only for today, but four or five generations into the future. So we have to be the stewards of all of the non-renewable resources, no matter the wishful thinking that we may put out there. So I would love to, you know, discuss other green alternatives. As I've mentioned, I want to see Palm Desert be the green vanguard. And there's lots of ways that, that we can do that. But I wanted to mention that when I got the email for the CVAG panelist, I thought it was spam. It didn't quite have any titles. So I had to say, hey, Eric, is this a phishing email? And so I think that we didn't quite get the calendar statement, because normally all that stuff pops in automatically as a calendar setting. So when I went back and I saw the email, I was mortified that I had missed it. So I'm not sure if I think I'd heard others may have received a similar nondescript kind of email that we were absent, but not by.
And Council Member Quintanilla, if I could interrupt, I just wanted to let you know that you're not the only person in Palm Desert. We are working with Clay and his team to figure out what that glitch is. So sorry for the inconvenience.
No worries, and Clay's on top of it. Thank you so much. I appreciate the extra time to put my two cents in, and thank you for all the work you're doing.
And please always feel free to reach out, Councilmember Quintanilla, on this. I've been involved in this from its earliest inception, before it was DCE, through CVAG, and just sort of how it all worked on our council, you know, as Palm Desert, we'll, I'm sorry, sometime look at this again. So be happy to meet with you and share some of the things we went through, because it was very much a learning experience. And of course, Mayor Pro Tem Jonathan was here for all of that. But of course, having more folks in Palm Desert on board is great.
Give me the tour. I want to see it with my own eyes. I want to hear it with my own ears.
That's great. I will look forward to that. So with that, thank you for joining us on short notice. Thank you, staff, for all the great work. And the meeting is adjourned. Have a great rest of the day, everyone. Take care.
Stay healthy and hydrated.